We begin our worship tonight in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I guess at Holden, it's rather difficult to know exactly how we are back home. I feel rather homemade tonight. I don't wear this at home. I've got one made in a factory. I don't wear this at home. I have one probably also made in a factory. I have a stole that was very expensive at home, and this is homemade. And there are a lot of things that I do here that I don't do back home. I feel more homemade here. I guess if it's like homemade apple pie, that's good, because that could mean that I feel a little more natural, authentic. Now, some of you probably wonder, as you watch each other and those on the faculty, what authenticity is. And I imagine some here think that primarily I run worship parades and circuses, and that litanies are flying kites and airplanes, and surely it hasn't got much to do with words. It's primarily, you know, dancing and twirling and funny things. Well, I must say I have to come to Holden to do that. Most of the time, I do that in the imagination of my heart. And it's an interpretation that I put on life. Strange, I just scratched here and suddenly I wondered what this was, and it was my beard. That's another homemade thing here. Someone said to me tonight, maybe you should, you know, hide. I said I thought I'd shave and hide so no one would know where I was, and do it differently. Tonight's service will be different from those that I have conducted here. I told Beanie it was going to be quiet, peaceful, beautiful, and it was going to have to do with the whole church year. It was going to have pictures and some poetry. And I couldn't get that projector to work, and everything went kaput, so I skipped supper and started over. It's not going to quite be so quiet. I've changed my motif a little bit. I think tonight it could be funny, or it could be sad. And maybe it will be both of those for us. What I want to do tonight is get at the meaning of something that we all know so very well, and that is our worship life in the church service. And I'm looking at some of the parts of the worship life tonight in kind of a new way, sort of from the southeast, sometimes from the northwest, standing on your head, you know, with a different perspective. But it's the same introit, or the same Gloria Patri, or the same pew, or you know, whatever it is that we're looking at, only I want to look at it just a little differently. And not to get rid of it, but really to enjoy it again and to reclaim it. Now, I think this is a very important thing to do because that's kind of what this week is about. I heard and was with Carol and the group on intercession this morning. And one of the things that Carol said, and I don't know if he remembers it, but I was writing some of these things. They had a lot of meaning. This one especially, he said that the gospel has to do with meaning. And then he said, it has to do with words meaning what they mean. I like that. That's kind of what tonight's theme is. It has to do with words meaning what they mean. And we all bring our meaning to them. And perhaps sometimes it would be a good thing if we could publicly do what I'm going to do tonight. That is, I'm going to be private publicly. I'm going to let you in on some very private thinking about what words, you know, mean when I really, for myself, go into their meaning. Now, to show you that it may be all right for us to get all kinds of emotional feelings about it, I looked hard for a passage where Jesus did some of this and got into trouble. Well, I don't expect to get into any trouble, at least not this much. But he did some of this, and this paragraph rather intrigued me. I don't mean to go into the theology of it. I mean simply to go into the circumstance that Jesus was in when he did some of this. It says in the book of John, the 6th chapter, "I am the bread of life," Jesus said. "Your forefathers ate the manna." Now, there was a loaded word, manna. You say manna and you've got a lot of imagery triggered off in the Jewish mind. "Your forefathers ate the manna in the desert, and they are dead. I am speaking of the bread that comes down from heaven, which a man may eat and never die." Now already, you know, you've got a lot of things. Dead, never die, bread, manna. "I am the living bread." I mean, but wait a minute, Jesus. Yeah. "I am the living bread, which has come down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, he shall live forever. Moreover, the bread which I give is my own flesh." I mean, it seemed very complicated. And now to throw that one in too, "is my own flesh, and I give it for the life of the world." And this led to a fierce dispute among the Jews. And they said, "How can this man give up his flesh to eat?" Jesus answered them, and then going to verse 59, "This was spoken in a synagogue when Jesus was teaching in Capernaum, and many of his disciples, on hearing it, exclaimed, 'This is more than we can stomach.'" And maybe that's where meaning comes, too, in this kind of confronting the old, you know, by standing on your head in the Northwest and looking at it quite differently than you had before. Now, to move us into the, to do this with tongue in cheek and gladness, I found a hymn that has some joy in it. I had a look a while, and I found one that had the very words, and it's an Epiphany hymn. It's hymn 52. "As with gladness, men of old did the guiding star behold." 52.
Thank you.
in these days that some of us are assisting Norm in thinking deeply about the hidden meaning of nursery rhymes and reading into their meanings that were probably never meant to be there, I chose to read quite a few vignettes that begin with the words "once upon a time." And they, in a sense, could be nursery rhymes if the church had them, because they're really not so, but maybe the meaning inside is what it's all about. And all of them are probably pointing to something that we want somehow to recapture, and Holden is a time to recapture. I don't know when I've hugged so much. I once knew a man who wore a cross, and he went to where there was a war. He got permission to risk his life and to hold church in the front line. He did not use a hymnal, and there was no time to read the Old and the New Testament lessons. He hopped from hole to hole, hugging the shoulders of the soldiers. He never stayed more than 30 seconds, and he never said anything at all. It was the only way that he could get into all his services. One day he held 246 services that way, and he never said a single word. I once knew a man who had a steel helmet. He used it to keep the sun out of his face and the bullets out of his head. And he uses it to cook soup, boil water, wash his face, and carry berries. He can sit on it, throw it in the air when he wins, kick it when he's angry. A chaplain came by, and they used the man's helmet as an offering plate, a plate for bread, and a common cup for wine. And when Christmas comes, he says he'll use it as a manger. Once there was a church where people came who had trouble loving others. They practiced by holding hands and saying yes, yes, yes to each other. And then they took turns saying it. They said yes, yes so loudly that absolutely everybody was sure that they were being said yes to. Why don't you try it? Say yes to each other. Yes. Now that sort of comes out of Holden. I don't know if Norm Hobble invented yes, but Hobble means yes to me, and so does Holden. Once there was a church that didn't have a cross in it. A building committee told them that they could save $100 that way. Instead, they have each learned how to make the sign of the cross with their fingers. They have learned to make the sign of the cross over bread and over water and over each other. And now instead of having one wooden cross, they have hundreds of them. And they sent the $100 to Holden. One man says yes, and Carol goes like this. That's a new kind of yes. I can see it coming in the church. We need something between sitting and standing. Well, something like this and all the ways. And I could say that, you know, the cross on the peanuts is something that you don't want to forget too quickly unless you'd like. Once there was a church that hired an architect. He made church pews out of crazy putty. They could be bent so that the people could see each other. And once the people turned the pews back to back, I don't know why, there was hardly a Sunday when they had them all in a very straight, long row. He is designing a texture now so that the people can make the pew any shape they want, depending upon why they want to worship. Just thought I'd throw that out for the engineers in case you want a new adventure. I'll go half the royalty with you. For Holden. Now, in all seriousness, one of the things I enjoy is sitting and seeing. Once there was a church that had no altar. Instead, there was just a circle on the floor. And every week it was someone's turn to be in that circle and be an altar. Once two boys covered with mud who had been fighting stood in the circle. They hugged each other and they smiled. No one told them to leave. No one asked them if they were Lutheran. Everyone agreed it was an altar. And there always has to be at least two in the circle. That was the only rule. Once there was a church where five girls could swim very well, and besides that, they were very beautiful. When the choir was on vacation, the girls did synchronized swimming, where it said anthem in the bulletin. Everybody liked it very much. The only thing that caused some trouble is that they had to put a pool in the middle of the sanctuary. Now, when the choir came back from vacation, everyone voted not to close the pool. Next week, their water anthem is called Come Unto Me. The people who especially like it are some of those who can't hear very well, which may be most of us. Once there was a church where they had many scientists. Their minister was once a scientist. He never had candles on the altar. He always had Bunsen burners. All the scientists in the congregation have the feeling that their lab tables are like altars, and they all have a candle in their lab. The minister never told them to do it. It just turned out that way. Once there was a church where everyone wore a mask. It was required that you did. 20 minutes was spent guessing who it was next to you. Everyone tried hiding as long as they could. For 20 minutes, then you took each other's mask off, and you laughed about how you had fooled the other person. And then for 20 minutes, they sang. That's how they spent the hour. Once there was a church that could not afford stained glass windows, could not afford any windows at all, so they bought balloons and just looked at them. They found out how many different colors there are for balloons in their own little town. They couldn't afford stained glass windows from Italy. And when they have more money, the first thing they're going to buy is brushes and paint. Had you fooled, didn't they? Yeah, I don't know. I have a few more here. Once there was a church that prayed for their nation and for the peace and for their president. Many people got restless during this long prayer called the prayer of the church. And so they put television sets into their church, and the people now come and pray. And that prayer comes just when the news comes on. There's always one man who is supposed to turn the set on very loud and very clearly so that everyone can see it and hear it. And all the people say, and they say it whenever they want to, is, "Hear us and help us, good Lord," while they watch TV. Once there was a church where the people took the offering back home with them. And this is how they did it. First, it was collected and brought to the altar. After that, they asked God to bless it, and he did. And then they took it back and put it into their pockets. But first, they mixed it up so that they could not tell the money which was blessed from that which was not. And then they left, and they spent it in their town, as though each piece was blessed. Once there was a church that got very tired of their old symbols, so they got rid of the triangles, circles, doves, and sheep. Now anyone can bring any symbol they like. There were always plenty, and they were always talked about. Once a girl brought a broken flower, and people tried to keep it from dying. Five people helped her try to keep the flower from dying. They had never seen the girl before. I have three more lines, but I think that's where it probably ends. Once there was a church where all the flowers were not on the altar. What a shame. They were in a large vase at the entrance of the church, and everyone who came took the altar flowers and wore them. And the flowers were always dedicated by somebody. In that way, a girl could even wear a flower given by the boy. Once there was a church where the bells broke. Dedicate this to Tweet. Once there was a church where the bells broke. The church had a very tall spire, and someone in the congregation had a fireworks factory, and he talked the people into letting him use the steeple for a launching pad. You'd be surprised how many people come on time to see the fireworks before the service begins. And someone always keeps saying how pretty the bells were, and the children say, "We never saw them." I knew a man in church who once wore a seed pod to a church banquet. And when they sat in the circle, he was a speaker. Some couldn't stand it, and finally they pointed to his dry boutonniere and they shouted, "It's dead." The man didn't say anything at all. He walked around the circle, crushed the pod, and gave each man a piece. They all went home and planted it. It was the first time some of the men knew that what looks like dead can be alive. I think this fits Holden. In fact, I think they all kind of fit the spirit that we have here. I once knew a church where a clown became a minister. The first thing he did was to turn the crying room into a makeup room. All week long, he helps people discover the face that they want to wear. He is an expert at making clown faces. He never calls on people. He never visits them because there isn't any time. So many come to see him to learn what faces to wear next Sunday. They spend a lot of time looking at each other. In fact, most of the time is spent that way. And now, finally, I think I shall read one for Carol, because this is kind of what Carol does to me. I once knew a minister who took up welding junk. He is more famous for his junk sculpture than he is for his sermons. What he's most famous for is helping people not throw away what seems to be unimportant. In fact, he doesn't seem to throw anything away at all. He claims it can somehow be used to make something valuable. All of this happened to me tonight, this afternoon, or this morning when we had choir practice. It happened in this way again. I was singing along, trying to mind my own business on the tenor line, when Elmer Witt just leans over and he asks me the question, "What is the Ark of God today?" And I never did that, learn that tenor, so I'm not singing with the choir tonight, because Elmer got me going on what I think this tonight is all about. What does a thing mean? What's the meaning of the thing? I mean, it seems to me that if a pew is a place for people to gather, then it ought to look like a gathering pew and not a separating bench. You know, if the Gloria Patri really is to be some exaltation, then maybe we ought to do it on tiptoe and or in some kind of form that fits the content. And if we sing a song, you know, that says, "Behold the Ark of God," I suppose that it's a legitimate question to ask, but not during choir rehearsal, what is the Ark of God? What does it mean? The great question, I guess, before us all this week, the meaning of the private meaning, and a chance for us to publicize that here at Holden. And this anthem that we're going to hear now has another special meaning to me, because Beanie not only helps you to sing, but he helps you to enjoy and to understand what you're singing. He helps you to put music to the meaning. You know, they belong together. And he helps you do that. And I'm going to restate one phrase and something that Beanie said that helped me a whole lot on this one line. This anthem, entitled, "Oh, Cease My Wandering Soul," dedicated to Mary and Carol Hinderley, written in 1944 by F. Melius Christensen, being sung tonight because we honor Mary and Carol this whole year, I think, being Carol's 30th anniversary in the ministry. We've celebrated it again once. We're going to celebrate it tonight, and I hope many times in this year. "Oh, cease my wandering soul on restless wing to roam. All this wide world to either pole hath not for thee a home, hath not for thee a home." Behold the ark of God. Behold the open door. O haste to gain that dear abode, and rove my soul no more, and rove my soul no more. And then Bini said about the next words, there safe shalt thou abide. He said, you believe those words. Say them so that someone else can believe it. You believe it, and you want someone else to believe it. And then he said, look where you came from, and rove my soul no more. There safe shalt thou abide. There sweet shall be thy rest. And every longing satisfied, with full salvation blessed, with full salvation blessed. Our prayer tonight is a prayer that is, it's really not, you know, dear Lord, and then the cliches or the sentences. It's saying something open to God. and somehow at the end of it saying an amen, simply because you know that God is present and that he does hear it. And it's kind of the way the whole day at Holden gets lived, in continual prayer. And I have chosen to read and to pray with you this tonight because it's going somewhere. It's an introit that I read last night in my group after supper. And when I had read it, as an example of introit being someone who walks through snow, you know, the first step through soft snow, or it would be somebody who breaks a path, somebody who opens a way. And again, to me, Holden is an introit. It opens a way. It begins something. The enjoyable thing, among many other things, was when someone here in the village said, I would like to draw that. I would like to paint it. And when Lucy said that, I thought, well, I'm not just going to give it to her in writing. I'm going to give it to her in the middle of the village. And then she can draw it and include it in her painting in whatever way, you know, and if we like to, and if we want to, we'll give it to Mary and Carol. And it began in the Minnesota Valley when I saw, I think, a trapper's footsteps going out to see his trap. And you know, the photo of that in the broken snow is kind of what Holden is. It's a breakthrough. The first one. There is a first one to break the day. The early riser who goes walking while all go on sleeping, who goes tracking fresh snow and taking dawn by surprise, the first one on the bridge, the first on the bus, the first to break money rolls in the city bank, the first to order rolls in the cafe, and the first chair in the symphony. There are the brave ones who open every day, rain or shine, whose single steps are soon erased by tens and twenties and thousands of followers. But they are the leaders. City leaders do not all sit in city councils. City leaders sit in trucks and hustle garbage before dawn and wash cement streets before seven. They toss papers on drowsy lawns, check latches on door locks on schedule, punch time clocks on the second, and turn thermostats up to 69. Men on their beat, with bread and guns and news and mops and clubs and vegetable crates and coffee cans and milk cartons, man was not made to walk alone, and all the others follow. City plant pioneers go on tiptoe, on cement, old wood floors and through creaking doors. They leave behind evidence that the day has begun. They establish the mood for the morning, the mood for the day. Without doubt, the city's unheralded firsts and unpublished pioneers arise. The heralds and city criers are on their way with cans and cartons and attaché cases and keychains. And frontiers come with every new day. The city has its new trials after every human incident. Men make their jungles and wastelands, and in the morning, they rediscover and they reclaim. There are the leaders, Lord, who brave each day, who reclaim the jungle. They walk alone, but not for long, Lord. Even Carol, even we all, we walk alone, but not for long. And then come all the others following. Lead us out into this night, Lord, and make this night an introit, and then give us a new one in the morning. Amen. Our closing hymn, an Easter hymn, a victory hymn, 566, Thine is the Glory.